Welcome to the Badass CEO Podcast. This is Mimi McLean. I'm a mom of five, entrepreneur, Columbia Business School grad, CPA, and angel investor. And I'm here to share with you my passion for entrepreneurship. Throughout my career, I have met many incredible people who have started businesses, disrupted industries, persevered, and turned opportunity into success. Each episode, we will discuss what it takes to become and continue to be a badass CEO, directly from the entrepreneurs who have made it happen. If you're new in your career, dreaming about starting your own business, or already an entrepreneur, the Badass CEO Podcast is for you. I want to give you the drive and tools needed to succeed in following your dreams. Before I get started, I wanted to talk to you about accounting and bookkeeping. As you may know, I'm a CPA, and this is a topic that still makes my stomach turn. However, I found a company that does it all for you at a super reasonable price. They do your bookkeeping and tax returns with ease. I couldn't believe how easy it was to get my books up to date, actually, because they were a little behind, and how inexpensive it was, too. To learn more about it, go to thebadassceo.com/bench. With that link, you receive 30% off your first 3 months. So definitely check them out and save some stress this year. Hi, welcome back to the Badass CEO. This is your host, Mimi McLean. And today I have on Inna Braverman, and she is a female business leader with a bold vision of wave energy and the co-founder and CEO of Echo Wave Power. Echo Wave Power is listed on the NASDAQ under Wave and is a leading onshore wave energy company that turns ocean energy and sea waves into green electricity and offers the only grid-connected nearshore wave energy solution in the world. For decades, attempts to build a wave energy captured solution have been built offshore with little success. Echo Wave Power offers an onshore grid-connected solution that is already generating electricity. The innovative model increases accessibility, lowers maintenance costs, and decreases sea life disruption. Inna was recognized by Fast Company as one of the world's most creative people in business for 2020 and is the winner of the United Nations Global Climate Action Award. To get your top 10 tips every entrepreneur should know, go to thebadassceo.com/tips. Inna, thank you so much for coming on today. I'm excited to talk to you. I mean, your story is very incredible. I was watching one of your TED Talks just before I jumped on. So I would love to just start with that and just talk a little bit briefly about why you started Echo Wave and how it relates to your childhood. And then we can go on from there.
Of course. So I was born in Ukraine in 1986. And 2 weeks after I was born, the Chernobyl nuclear reactor exploded, which was the largest in history nuclear disaster in terms of cost and casualties. And I was one of the babies that got hurt from the negative effects of the explosion. I actually had a respiratory arrest and a clinical death. My mother approached my crib and she saw me completely blue and pale and no pulse, not breathing. And she freaked out. She ran to my dad and she was like, my baby is dead. Like, what do I do? And my dad like told her, like, you're a nurse, do something. And, you know, she was so stressed, she forgot that she's a nurse. And then she actually gave me a mouth-to-mouth resuscitation until the ambulance came and saved my life. So my life started kind of by getting a second chance in life. Mm-hmm. So I always grew up, like, I don't remember, of course, I was a baby, but in all the family gatherings and all the holidays, you know, that we do together as family, like, I kept hearing that, wow, like, you got a second chance in life and hearing this story over and over again. So I really grew up with the feeling like, okay, I didn't just get a second chance in life for no reason. That's not something regular. I should really do something good with it. That's kind of what led in the end of the day. Like, of course, with many steps in between, which I can share, but that's what kind of led in the end to the opening of Echo Wave Power, because I really felt that this is something that can contribute to our planet, contribute to the stopping of climate change and so on.
Was that something you were thinking about for a long time, or is that through your studies in college? Like, when did you think, okay, I want to kind of have an alternative power source?
So actually it happened kind of by incident. Like, it wasn't planned. When I was 4 years old, my family immigrated from the Ukraine to Israel, also because of the health situation, which was very, very bad in the region. My sister and I were very sick as children. And we immigrated to a super small town, like that was very not developed back then in the north of Israel, called Akko. And there was nothing in the city to do. There was no cinema. There was like nothing for children or adults even to do, because Israel is a very young country and was even younger, of course, back then. And all the time I grew up feeling like I want to do something, like I want to make a change, I want to influence, but I really couldn't find out what, because there wasn't like words like technology or startups or female entrepreneurship or even entrepreneurship without the female in it. You know, there wasn't really a lot of knowledge about it, definitely not renewable energy and so on. So when I grew up, I decided to go and study political science in Haifa University. So I said to myself, okay, maybe I can make a positive change in the world by going into politics. You know, the innocence of when you're in your 20s, saying, okay, like I will save the world by being this great politician or will make a positive change. And I studied in Haifa University, which is a university in the north of Israel. And when I finalized my studies, I was surprised to find out that there was no lineup of politicians waiting to hire, you know, a political science major. The prime minister and the president, they didn't call. And I started looking for a job. Because, you know, you're older, you finish your degree, you need to do something. And there's a popular website for searching jobs in Israel. So I went to this website and I saw an ad of a Hebrew English translator in a renewable energy company. And in that company, I actually got to know like about the whole concept of renewable energy, about solar, about wind energy, about wave energy. And as opposed to wind and solar, which were back then already like fully commercialized, the technologies were fully developed. There was nothing really to renew in that field. Everybody were kind of fighting for the same production quota and for the same piece of the same pie. And the wave energy was something that all the scientists and the engineers of the world, they said that wave energy and forecasted that wave energy can create twice the amount of electricity that the world produces now, which is like an insane amount. Yet no matter how many companies went into the field, like large electrical companies, large investment companies, no matter how much money was put into it, how much technological efforts were put into it, no matter what the companies had, nobody was able to make it happen. Like nobody was able to commercialize wave energy. And as a young and ambitious woman at the time, I'm still young and ambitious. But, younger,
yeah.
I said to myself, okay, like all these companies, they have the money, they have the technical experience, they have the contacts, they have everything. They cannot do it. I can do it.
And well, that's why. I mean, that's amazing that you like thought that. You're like, okay, I have all these people have the money, everything that like you just said, but they couldn't figure out. But what made you think that you could?
Because like in the beginning, it's not like I thought that I could. I just gained like a really natural interest into it because I saw that it's such a huge source. It can really like bring the world to this net zero emissions dream that we're having. You know, it's wave energy. Our world is covered by seas and oceans around us. So I just started researching in online databases, in, you know, different books, even in the like anything I could find about wave energy, I researched to understand exactly what went wrong to all the companies that actually did it.
Yeah.
Just by reading so much, I understood like that there were five main problems that all the companies were facing. So I kind of understood, okay, if you can solve these five problems, you're going to commercialize wave energy. Like that's what's missing. You know, just from looking outside the box, by not being an engineer, you can sometimes see or find something common throughout all the experiments that have been made. So I started thinking of my own kind of ideas and concepts. But I didn't have anything to do with it because, you know, even to build a power station, you need money. But even to register a patent, you need money. And like, again, it's a family of immigrants, so no contacts, no money, no, there was no ability. So I kind of put the idea aside as unrealistic. And then one day I went to a social event and next to me sat a guy named David. And he looked a little bit like a hippie, like with a lot of bracelets on his hands. So like, I couldn't know who the person is. And he just asked me, what's your passion? And I said, wave energy. And it turned out that he's a serial entrepreneur that made a number of successful exits and invested a lot of his funds in real estate. And one of his real estate was a surf hotel in Panama. So he was sitting there watching the power of the waves and thinking like in a completely different side of the world, like there's probably something better that you can do with the power of the waves other than marine sports. and started also researching and thinking what can be done with wave energy. So kind of our meeting, which was it was like a match made in business heaven. And that was the beginning of the Eco Wave Power.
That's amazing. Because it is, you know, I was reading your story. I was like, this is phenomenal that you were so young. I think you were 24 when you started it. And I was like, wow, like to take on like the Goliath, like, you know, like it was David and Goliath situation where you're taking on Goliath, where they massive companies weren't able to figure out, but here you are young and the funds that you needed. And so when you started it with David, did you guys originally use his financing or did you guys immediately go out for financing? How did that look like?
Well, we actually wanted to push as farther as possible the going out for financing, because of course, if you don't want to kind of, you know, give up too much shares in the company, then you better be as advanced as possible at the moment that you're fundraising. So David actually put the first $1 million into the company, which was amazing because, you know, not a lot of people would necessarily put $1 million to an idea of somebody that is 24 years old. But also I was very responsible with the funding. Like for me, it was a great opportunity to make our dream come true, to change the world. So I chose actually to go to Ukraine in the beginning, and we made a competition between 300 engineers to choose a team of five, which helped us to make our concept from like a theoretical concept to something practical, blueprints and patent submission and so on. Because in Ukraine, there's very bright minds, but of course, the salary levels are much lower than in Israel or in the United States, for example. So we kind of did the $1 million investment happened step by step. It didn't happen at once.
And then how did you figure out how to get past those five hurdles that the other companies couldn't do? Did they help you or had you already figured that out?
No, so that kind of was part of our initial idea. So we thought, first of all, maybe we recap in short the five hurdles. So 99% of the competitors in the wave energy, and still this is the case in our market, decided to go into the offshore. The offshore is 4 or 5 kilometers into the sea. When you go that far into the sea, first of all, the price is sky high. They put this huge floater in the middle of the ocean, and inside the floater, you have the generators, the conversion unit, super expensive. You need underwater mooring and underwater cables, which makes the prices, of course, sky high. The second problem was when these companies went to install in the offshore, they didn't take into account that in the offshore you have tsunami waves, which are waves of 20 meters and even higher. And unfortunately, no man-made stationary equipment can survive the loads of a 20-meter wave height. So a lot of these companies that spent hundreds and millions of dollars for very small power stations that, you know, were tested in the offshore broke down after 3 days of operation, like Pelamis, for example. In Australia, OceanLink sunk. In Scotland, Wello Oil recently sunk, like also an offshore technology. So there was a lot of high-profile failures because of the very high wave. And it was immediately like total loss to the system. Now, insurance companies saw that it's so expensive and it's breaking down all the time. That's not a good insurance case, of course, for them. So they started to, you know, kind of stay away from wave energy. And if you can get insurance, you can get the financing. Environmentalists, which were supposed to be the greatest supporters and proponents of wave energy, were actually objecting it because it's created a new presence on the ocean floor, which disturbed the marine environment, the offshore technologies. And they got so preoccupied with trying to make their price down and like up their reliability that most of them didn't even get the chance to connect to the electrical grid. So they became a huge question mark on whether wave energy can even connect to the grid. So we understood that, okay, if we want to ever commercialize, we need to be cost efficient, reliable, insurable, environmentally friendly, and connect so that we can connect to the grid. And that's kind of what we did. We decided to go completely against the industry. Like everybody were fighting for the offshore, trying to get there. And we decided to build on the onshore and nearshore. Now, it doesn't mean like prime real estate or, you know, beaches. It means like existing structures such as piers, breakwaters, jetties, and other types of marine structures. By doing so, we didn't need to put all our expensive equipment in the water. The generators and so on can be on land, just like a regular power station. So the price went significantly down. Like our Gibraltar power station, which is our first grid connected power station, cost us only $450,000. Pelamis power station, which was similar size, cost about $150 million in development costs. Then in terms of reliability, once we don't have all the expensive equipment in the water, you don't have a risk to the expensive equipment. And we came up with a patented storm protection mechanism. So when the waves are too high for the system to handle, the floaters automatically goes up above the water level and locks in the upward position until the storm passes.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it commences operation. As soon as insurance companies saw that it's cost-effective and it doesn't break down, they agreed to insure us. Environmentalists were actually super happy about our technology because, you know, the breakwaters and the piers and the jetty, they're made from cement, and cement is endangering the environment. Cement in the water is not the best thing for marine life. So we take something that mankind has to build to protect the coastal population and the ports, but is damaging the environment, and suddenly turn it into a source of clean electricity. So we were also accepted by the environmentalists. And the grid connection for us was very easy because, again, we're super close to the land. We're on breakwaters and piers. So the grid connection lines are very short, efficient, and connect to substations that are already there.
Once you had the product that was working, what was your next step? You said Gibraltar was your first place that you put your technology?
Yeah. So in 2016, we opened our first, the first place that we put the technology actually was the Crimean Peninsula. I went back to Ukraine and the first experiment that we made was there, which was then a Ukrainian territory, now problematic, but that's where we made our first test. Then when we saw that the technology works, we received approval from the port of Jaffa in Israel, and we made our first real conditions testing. But it was not connected to the grid because there was no legislation or policies how to connect wave energy to the grid. In 2016, we opened our first grid-connected power station in Gibraltar, which has been operating ever since. And now we're building our second grid-connected power station, actually in Israel as well, with the investment from the Israeli Energy Ministry, which recognized our technology as pioneering technology, and 50% investment from EDF Renewables IL, which is the French national electrical company. Basically, our near future goal is, now that we solved these five problems, and we showed that we're cost-efficient, not breaking down, and so on, the next step is show that we can produce large electricity amounts and become profitable. Mm-hmm. So we announced recently the signing of a 20 megawatt concession agreement in Portugal. And our goal is to start the development of the project this year because we already received the licenses for the first 1 megawatt, which is the largest scale that we built to date. And then prove that we're, as I said, because to be an industry, it's good to make a great impact and so on, but we need to show profitability and large energy amounts because this is something that would really change the world. So this is our next step. And an important element for us is also penetration to the US market. So we recently announced a pilot with AltaSea at the Port of Los Angeles, which will be the first time that...
I was going to ask you about that because I used to live in Los Angeles and they have such a problem with electricity. I'm like, LA needs this.
And it's an amazing opportunity for us to collaborate with the Port of Los Angeles. Also, there is a coalition that is part of the Biden's Build Back Better that is led by the city of Los Angeles, by Mayor Eric Garcetti. He's very supportive of renewable energies and also committed to net zero emissions. The whole United States actually committed to, you know, by 2050 to be at net zero emissions. And it's not possible to do it with only, again, solar, which is an amazing source, or wind. We need to combine all renewable energy sources. And a recent study actually came up about the US showing that wave energy can provide 66% of the energy in the United States alone. So that's like an amazing way.
So you would have to just be working out and reaching out to each of the governments, working with the towns, is that, and the electrical companies?
So we're working usually with ports because ports are owners of the largest breakwaters and marine structures. So usually the port or the coastal municipality gives us kind of the concession to use the structure. And then we work with the energy ministry or the government to make the policies, to determine what will be the feed-in tariff for selling the electricity into the grid and make it all happen for us. Nowadays, unfortunately, there is not enough or there's not sufficient legislation that is made for wave energy because it's kind of, you know, the new kid in the block of renewables. Then a lot of the government said, it's not going to happen for many years, and didn't really stop and decide to legislate. So we get contacted by cities and countries and states in the United States and in the world that are telling us, come build your power station. And I say, yeah, we will be glad to do it. What do you need? What licenses do you need? What information? And then they say, we don't know, and go and find out or start setting the policies. So right now we're quite in a unique position where our technology readiness is high, but there's not necessarily policies. So sometimes it takes us longer to get the policies in place as a first mover in the industry than actually build the power station. And this is something that we need to change. And actually, we're starting to see this change in Israel, which made some legislation and policies for us, Gibraltar that made it for us when we came, and also in the United States, because in our bell ringing ceremony, we're now publicly traded on NASDAQ in the US. Assemblyman Robert Karabinchak, he promised that he will move forward with legislation for the commercialization of wave energy. So we're starting to see a positive move in the right direction.
Oh, that's great. That was the next question I was going to ask you, is I see that you're listed on the NASDAQ and it's Wave is your listing. And so can you tell us about that process?
So in 2019, actually, the company started looking at listing on the public market. We didn't know which market yet, because we saw that most of our business is, like you said, with governments, with energy ministries, and these kind of entities, they like to work with publicly traded companies because of the transparency. You know, all the information is there. You can see the financial situation of the company. You can see basically everything that is of importance. And we were looking where to list the company. And at first, we looked at the US stock exchanges. We looked at the Australian stock exchange, Canadian stock exchange, the London AIM, and so on. But in the end, we decided to list it in July 2019 on NASDAQ Stockholm. So that was our first listing, which is the European NASDAQ. We also said we became the first Israeli company to list on NASDAQ Stockholm. And we said that for us, it's a stepping stone to NASDAQ US. So, and within 2 years, in July 2021, we actually uplisted the company to NASDAQ US.
Congratulations to you. That's amazing. I mean, you have to be one of the youngest CEOs, I would think, female CEOs listed.
I know definitely that I didn't check like throughout the whole, all the sectors, but I do know that in the energy industry, unfortunately, only 5% of the board executives are women in the whole energy, worldwide energy sector. So I would say, one, there's not enough women. Two, there's definitely not enough young women. So I hope to inspire and to be able to help a shift in that regard.
Right, right. And then what would you say so far has been your most difficult hurdle that you've had to face?
I think a lot.
I know, it's hard, right? You make it sound so easy, but it's not, right? It's every day is a problem. What would you say, like looking back, you're like, wow, I did not expect that to be as big as it was.
I think that the two biggest difficulties that like I faced throughout my journey were like two different layers. One, operationally, because wave energy has been trying to commercialize for so long with so many high profile failures. Many people, like when I would come to tell them about, you know, our amazing wave energy technology, they didn't even want to listen. And that's very hard when you're super passionate about something and people don't want to listen. Two is like more on a personal level is that, like we said, there's not enough women in the STEM sector and in the energy sector, definitely there's not enough. So every time, you know, when I opened the company, every time that I would get finally a meeting or somebody that is willing to hear about wave energy, and I would come to the conference room all excited to present EcoWave Power and its amazing solution, people would say, espresso, please, coffee. All the men in the room were sure that if there's a woman that is coming, she's there as somebody's assistant, which is not the most pleasant way when you're already kind of a minority in the room. It's not the most pleasant way to start with confidence. So I think a lot has to do, again, with being a female entrepreneur. Even like when we publicly listed on NASDAQ in 2019 on the Swedish NASDAQ, that's a very kind of strange story, which I find strange till today. You know, I was extremely proud to reach to a point that we publicly listed. It's like an amazing milestone. We wanted to hire a local Swedish PR company to help people to recognize our stock. We're the first Israeli company that listed on NASDAQ Sweden. And we met with a local huge PR company, and there were many people in the room, and one woman was the most senior employee of the company or partner in the company. And we were super impressed. And when everybody left, she told me, do you want to hear an advice? And I said, I would love to. You know, I'm new in the market. I don't know enough. And she said, if you ever want your company to be successful on the financial market, you need to step down from being the CEO and hire a man with white hair. Because a woman doesn't show and doesn't say expert. A man, an older man, is an expert. Like, they will never accept you. And I didn't listen. I chose not to step down, but also not work with them. But I did learn from it a very important lesson that no matter what people tell us, you know, that we're weak, that we cannot, that it's not possible, we should definitely not step down. Because if we step down, our female friend will step down, our children will step down, their children will step down. And that's a very negative chain of events. And that's something that we definitely have to prevent.
No, that's true. That's a very good point. And then what advice would you give to other fellow entrepreneurial women?
First of all, trust your instincts. because the many times, you know, when my engineers came to me to show me sketches of the product or some new development that we're going to do, it looked to me that something is wrong. Like instinctively, when it's your company and you're that, you know, emerged into the work, you know things that other people, no matter what's their level of education or experience, don't know. So when they would come to me and show me something and I knew something wouldn't work, I was too shy to say it, or I would say it and then they would tell me, how do you know? You're not even an engineer. And then I would kind of, you know, pull back and say, they're right, I'm not, they are, they're, you know, older, more experienced. And then, you know, when we would make a test with that item, it would fail exactly where I thought it would. So I learned that, listen, you don't necessarily have to be an engineer to run a technology company. Actually, it's an advantage that you can see outside of the box and think outside of the box. So that's one advice. Two, to really have passion and persistence, because any entrepreneur will hear a lot of no, you know. That's part of being an entrepreneur. So really, if that's your true passion, then don't give up. As I always say, that passion is the greatest renewable energy source. And it is.
Mm-hmm, I like that. That's a good one.
Definitely pursue our passion and our dreams. And maybe the third thing that we females struggle, and I think I struggle with it as well, is we need to understand that we don't have to be perfect. Because even a study, there's a famous study by Hewlett Packard that they check how women apply for jobs and men. A woman would apply only when she meets 100% of the criteria for that job offering. A man would apply when he meets only 60%. We feel that we have to be that perfect that we actually have to meet 100% of the items in an ad. So that kind of needs to change, because you can be a perfect entrepreneur or a perfect man or a perfect woman. So I think it will make it much easier for us to progress if we would kind of accept.
Well, it's so true. I mean, as you know, you launch a product and you're always adapting and changing it. You may be changing your logo. You may be changing your mission. You're always changing your company and adapting, right? So you can't be perfect because you're always changing.
And you don't need to be perfect. That's the nice thing in life.
Yes, yes. And I'm very impressed with also, I didn't talk about it yet and address what I talked about in the introduction, but like how you were awarded for Fast Company as one of the world's most creative people in business and people, not just women, right? Which is great in 2020. And then also on Wired Magazine, you were nominated the Female Changing the World. Very impressive. And congratulations to you for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, take care. Thank you very much. And I appreciate it. And good luck with LA. I'm excited to see what happens with that too.
Thank you, Mimi. We will be glad to invite you to the opening.
No, I would love to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice meeting you. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on The Badass CEO. To get your copy of the top 10 tips every entrepreneur should know, go to thebadassceo.com/tips. Also, please leave a review as it helps others find us. If you have any ideas or suggestions, I would love to hear them. So email me at mimi@thebadassceo.com. See you next week, and thank you for listening.